my life gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Peace in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. 'Cause I can't stop the walk, shelter homeless.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. Today we're going to discuss the Pizzagate scandal again and the involvement of the Clinton Foundation, the CIA, the DynCorp Corporation, convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein and George Soros and the global arms, drugs, and human trafficking and the organ harvesting networks. My guest today is a fantastic investigative reporter, George Webb. His ongoing open-source investigation has exposed a criminal network of high-level government officials and corporations that have been creating crises and manufacturing wars all over the globe for many years. He has created a video series on YouTube that investigates the crimes and scandals surrounding the Clinton Foundation and its many donors. His investigation is the most important research out there right now. I've posted his YouTube video series on my Facebook page for listeners to review his research. I'll bring George on now and have him explain what drew him into this investigation to begin with. Hi, George.
Hey, Evelyn, how are you? It's good to be back.
Yes, it's good to have you back. Boy, you've made a lot of headway since the last time you were on.
Yeah, I guess up to 2.2 million views now and, 23,000 subscribers. So I build the audience gradually and slowly because it's really more about research and getting citations in the press and getting documents. So it's not like watching cat videos or anything. It's, it takes a little bit of work to watch my series. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. But if you follow it along like I did, it unravels everything.
Yeah.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I was just going to say there's an old Greek fable about the golden thread. If you pull that thread, king's clothes come off, If you just keep pulling, it takes a while. But then even a little boy watching it can say, hey, king has no clothes. And that's kind of what the investigation is.
Right. So what, I want, of course, my listeners, they're more interested in the Pizzagate scandal and of course, the child trafficking. And, of course, when George started this, he went on an investigation to find the drug trafficking and the arms trafficking. And as he went along the line, he rolled in and, I can't remember which video it was on, but then he came across the human trafficking and the organ harvesting networks. And that really surprised me because I reported on war profiteering back in the 2000s, and I never got that far where I uncovered this. So go ahead and tell us a little about this. How widespread is it? How many countries are they doing this in?
Well, it's an interesting, so I'm day 141 in my series and basically started the series when the ex-CEO of the Clinton Foundation kind of made a run for the, he's kind of on the run making a run for the Russian embassy. And people dispute that, but then all the cameras in that area have been taken away for that day, so it's a little suspicious. But a few days later, people will remember the HUMA server came out with the 650,000 emails. And the chief of detectives in New York, a guy named Noyce, N-O-N-O-Y-C-E, said that there was all kinds of sex trafficking emails in there. There was money laundering, so that's the drug piece. There was pay to play, so that's the political piece. And so that's when really the thing started. And that's really the web. That's like Trump called it the treasure trove. That's really the web of this whole thing. And everything that I have reported on since then, all the different types of what they call rat lines or all the different types of trafficking, have really come from just pulling on those threads from the Podesta emails.
Right.
The latest one, is these Awan brothers, A-W-A-N. I don't know. Everyone should know who they are. There's four brothers from Pakistan and two wives that work for members of Congress. They've worked for 31 different Democratic members of Congress, all kind of hired and put in by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and before that, Terry McAuliffe, who was then the head of DNC. So they've worked there for about 12 years. Since 2004, and they've worked for the Democratic representative that work on the most sensitive intelligence information in Congress. So they work for what they call the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, which is doing the Trump Russia investigation, Homeland Security, and then also Foreign Affairs. Well, it wouldn't be much of a story unless, at the beginning of this year, the stepmother of these brothers, well, first of all the brothers are being paid 2.5 to 3 times what normal congressional staffers are being paid. And no one ever seems to see them, but they have top secret clearance. So up by you, Representative Jackie Speier from Silicon Valley asked for top secret clearance for these. Now, remember, they're born in Pakistan, not in the United States.
Right.
The stepmother says she calls the police one day, January 2nd, in Washington, D.C. area, and says, "My stepsons have imprisoned me in my house. I can't. They won't let me leave. They can tap my phones, and they're torturing me by saying, 'Hey, we can hear what you're saying,' and so forth." And the brothers then, after the police report is filed, go into the house, steal the father's computer, and then take off for Pakistan.
And well, they left the country.
Yeah, they left the country. And the other thing amazing, right after that, there's 20 different burglaries in 20 different congressional representatives' offices where hard drives are stolen, thumb drives are stolen, and laptops are stolen.
Really?
So, you know, and this is the most sensitive information in the U.S. So,
right.
Now, if these guys were Russian, it would be all over the news, because we're not talking about just some server that sends spam email. We're talking about, you know, hard drives from the most sensitive government committees in our Congress.
Is this in the news?
So, yeah, Daily Caller, a guy named Rosiak, a reporter for Daily Caller, has got the story. There's stories in USA Today. If you Google Awan Brothers, you'll see a whole bunch of hits come up. It's been reported. But the thing is, these are based on reporting. There's the representatives, Gregory Meeks from New York is quoted. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, like I mentioned, Jackie Speier is one of the folks. Adam Schiff is one of the folks. All these people that are on these intelligence committees, they're all Democrats, and they're all kind of connected through the Debbie Wasserman Schultz kind of network, the DNC network. So in my series, if you go to it today, if you just Google George Webb and Awan Brothers and Day 141, you can, you know, get an update on this with all the facts and citations and so forth.
Right. Yeah, I'll post your whole series on my Facebook page again. And now, how about Republicans? Republicans in on this?
No, they're not.
Any of those hard drives?
No, they didn't. They just went into. Now, I've talked to a couple of congressional aides, and one of the great things about the series is there's so many researchers that send me stuff. There are people like a New York police detective, you know, has been sending me information. A lot of retired FBI send me information because they see this counterterrorism division of the FBI as the kind of taking over the FBI over the field offices, kind of intimidating the field offices. But I'll also get people like who work in the congressional offices. And what they tell me is that they just show up with a badge, and they say, we're here to work on the computers. And then they have root-level access, admin-level access to all the computers. Now, there is an email from John Podesta's email series where W. Wasserman Schultz says, Imran, Awan, A-W-A-N, has the password to my iPad. So we already know that he had root-level access to her stuff.
Why would they have this? Why would they let them do this?
Well, yeah. I mean, for instance, you know, the Navy SEAL's wife that just recently was on the speech by Trump. You could take information about a planned raid for Yemen, let's say, and what the House Permanent Select Committee does is the CIA will go to these committees and then review with them what they're going to do. Okay, and then just so everyone in Congress knows it's going to happen. Well, if that gets leaked out to the Muslim Brotherhood or, sympathizers, then they can know that they're coming and have, Stinger missiles to shoot down the helicopters and all kinds of things they can prepare. There is a possibility that this leak caused the death of that Navy SEAL.
Really?
You could also use the foreign affairs information to win contracts, to win defense contracts, to underbid competitors in defense contracts, or get dirt on your competitors for defense contracts.
Sure.
The Homeland Security information could be used to hack the system to bring in terrorists into the U.S., give them visas, give them diplomatic visas so they didn't even have to go through the security checkpoints. That sort of thing. So it's really a huge gaping security hole. And these guys, at least by their stepmother who's very close to the situation, she has said that they have gone to Pakistan, they've fled to Pakistan, as well as their father. And we've gone to their social media sites, and it's full of the, jihadi stuff, and then it looks like the father works for the police that's connected with the Pakistan intelligence agencies. ISI is the Pakistan Intelligence Service. So it really looks like a foreign intelligence operation with these six of wands. And remember, they're making 2.4 times the median congressional pay, and the wives are making 3 to 4 times what median congressional pay. And they're all working together, living in the same houses.
Really?
Yeah.
What are the Democrats saying about this? That had
we better concentrate on Trump and this Alpha Bank server and the spam email and all that.
Oh, really? So, they stole this from the top security agencies in this country, and we got to focus on this big Trump distraction.
Right. So there's one congressman, one in the House of Representatives, that has mentioned this in congressional session. And that's a guy by the name of Louis Gohmert. It's his name. Louis, like Crab Louis or Shrimp Louis, and then Gohmert is G-O-H-M-E-R-T. But what's interesting is, a question to ask is, what if these were Russian brothers?
Right.
Right? What if these are Russian brothers that had fled to Russia with all these hard drives? Oh, and by the way, the stepmother says they were funneling money offshore. They were also, in addition to working full-time, they were also had a car dealership that went belly up with ties and connections to a known Hezbollah counteragent or agent. So if you, there's all these news articles that have come out. So I encourage everybody just to, tweet to at Gohmert, Louis Gohmert. It's R-E-P, Louis, like Crab Louis, and then Gohmert. It should come up for you on Twitter. And just say, what are we doing about the Awan brothers? Because today is Trump's deadline for getting information to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence for the wiretap accusation. And what is important is that he sent a letter today saying this should be included in the Russia in the Russia investigation.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it should be the main investigation, my God.
Yeah, and the other piece of this...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Well, what if the Russians are paying the Pakistan intelligence service for all of our information? I mean, it's much more of a leak. It's much more of a leak than the spam going to the Alpha Bank and Spectrum Health. You know, so it needs to be investigated no matter what. It has a potential leak.
My God, can you imagine the money they could make off selling this information?
Oh, it's invaluable. You know, the $100 billion that we spent for all of our hacking tools, the CIA hacking tools, of course, came out after this as well.
Right.
So it could be that these guys released that information somehow to WikiLeaks, to the highest bidder. I mean, if it cost the United States $100 billion to develop all those tools in the Vault 7, you know, that release is in the news this week. Yeah. What would you be willing to pay, Russia? Would you be willing to pay $2 billion? Okay, great. Here it is. We don't know that didn't happen. It came out right after the Iwans fled.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, if somebody robs a top secure bank, let's say a Fort Knox, we would have to look at people who have done that in the past, who had that access, a top security clearance where they could get in with the badges and so forth, and that we would be looking for people who fled the country, right?
Right.
And this is the same situation. This is the exact same situation. A huge bank of cyber weapons has been stolen, $100 billion has been stolen, and then moved out of the country.
Right. That should be the top story for every mainstream media publication.
It absolutely should be. It's not an anti-Muslim thing. I'm Jewish, but I've defended Muslims. There was a case here in Portland, the Portland Christmas tree bomber case in 2010. The current deputy the FBI right now, McCabe, ran that. It was kind of, they set him up, a state crime for just PR. I fought him tooth and nail. So this isn't a Muslim thing. This is a U.S. thing. Are you Jewish as well, Evelyn? I didn't know.
No, but absolutely, when you were talking about all this, Muslim never entered my mind. Nothing to do with nationality.
Yeah, well, anyway, so this isn't an anti-Jewish thing because, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz or Jackie Speier or anything like that, and this isn't an anti-Muslim thing. This is the only thing I can think of in American history that comes close to this is the Rosenbergs, when the Rosenbergs stole the secret to the atomic bomb, and they were both put to death. You know, these cyber weapons are every bit as dangerous as atomic weapons because they can take down banking systems, they can take down, you know, your water purification systems, they can take down your electrical grid. So you can imagine how much havoc. I mean, you can actually, it would be easier to use than an atomic weapon because after all the chaos is caused in the country, it's not radioactive. You know, it's even more effective of a weapon than a nuclear weapon.
Right. You know,
wouldn't be on the news. And, you know, all people have to do is just Google the Wan brothers to see that I'm not making this up. This happened.
Sure. So. But if people aren't alert to your investigation, what's going on, they'd never think in a million years to type in the Wan brothers.
Oh, right.
You know, if the mainstream media is not covering this, you know, people don't know about it.
Well, yeah, and the other piece to this is there is a network in the United States of this Gulen. It's G-U-L-E-N, right? And he has a long history with the CIA, going all the way back to 1989 and the breakup of the Soviet Union. And what they did was, it's called a soft jihad or a civilized jihad. But what you do is you infiltrate with schools, and then you infiltrate with these teachers. But the teachers are actually have diplomatic passports, and they're actually CIA spies. And then they would put people in different parts of the government, you know, at different, especially the police and military and politics. And then gradually you infiltrate, and then when you're ready to do the coup, you do it all at once, and it collapses, just like a building collapsing. And he did it. Gulen has done this all over, you know, the countries that end in the word Stan, you know, Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, all those Stans, all of those in Central Asia, also Azerbaijan, and I call that the John with the other five Stans. And he tried it in Turkey just last year with Hillary. Hillary and Gulen are very tied closely together. And the Muslim Brotherhood, they tried it on July 15th. They tried to overthrow Erdogan. And they have the same thing in the United States. Mainly in Texas was where they got started, Gulen schools. And then they went to California, Florida, New York, Pennsylvania. Gulen is based, came here in the United States in 2001, right before 9/11. And now the Midwest, they have a lot of schools in the Midwest. And what they do is they start out by saying, oh, we're just a science and mathematics academy.
Right.
And it starts out just praying to Allah five times a day and get the kids doing that, wearing uniforms. But as they go on to the boarding school level, they start introducing the more radical parts of the Quran and this idea of Islamic exceptionalism. Now, I'm against exceptionalism, no matter if it's Jewish exceptionalism or Nazi exceptionalism or Islamic exceptionalism. But anyway, they start introducing the Quran. They start, you know, moving more toward getting the kids to go visit Islamic countries, then take missions to Islamic countries, and all the while grooming them for positions of power. So it's a long-term thing. But this is, there's a guy by the name of Graham Fuller. He's a kind of a genius, a spy master, who architected all this since 1989 for the fall of the Republic of Russia, the republics around Russia. And they're doing the same thing in the United States. Well, anyway, Gulen has $43 billion in drug money in Malaysian banks that he has filtered through Turkey. And the these folks, these Awans, are part of that network. The Awan brothers are part of that network. There's these car dealerships all over the world and other cutouts, what they call cutouts, you know, fake businesses, that are funneling money to Gulen. You don't have $43 billion in the bank by selling falafels. You know what I mean? It's drug money. It's drug money.
Right.
You know, and he has many ties
drug
to
money.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And he's got ties to a banker called Al-Qadi, Al-Qadi, and Al-Qadi is the funnel, is the Turkish bank funnel for all this drug money to go back. All the Pakistan drug money is funneled back through Turkey and goes to these Malaysian banks.
And see, all this, like that, all these different countries and stuff, you know, I never even investigated Pakistan over the years. I don't even, never even knew what they're up to, you know, and now you're talking about all this going on in Pakistan. How many countries have been overthrown?
Well, the story of Pakistan is really starts in 1979 with Zbigniew Brzezinski, and the ISI, their intelligence service, recruited and brought over rich Saudis and recruited, you know, Sunni, radical Sunni Muslims to overthrow the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. So they gave them the Stinger missiles and so forth, and then established, in order to pay for it, they had the farmers change from growing whatever they were growing, vegetables or whatever, over to opium. And then the opium used to be purified in Turkey for moving on to Europe, but then they started in East Pakistan, a lot of the schools develop the technology to purify the opium to heroin there. But that heroin rat line has been going since 1979. Now, during the Afghan War, it really shot up. The opium production is at an all-time high right now from that Pakistan-Afghan border area.
Right. And they're the ones supplying all the drugs in this country, aren't they?
The heroin. The cocaine is obviously coming from Central America. Cocaine starts out in the hills of Bolivia and, you know, these little farmers that are starving and they've forgotten how to farm food. And they have this cash crop. So now the CIA has the leverage over them because if they can cut off that money, they'll starve. So when, when you're going to die, you do what the guy tells you to do. And so anyway, it makes its way up through Central America and then it, comes in through California or comes in through Haiti into, the East Coast, Miami and so forth. Louisiana, New Orleans is another key point, and then obviously California and then some spots in Texas. Coca, everything, so it's all grown in Mexico. Mexico is more of a drug enforcer kind of network and a transportation network than it is a grower. Now, that's not true for marijuana, but it is true for a lot of the cocaine.
Right. So how do they transport that heroin over here into the U.S. then?
Well, here's Jeffrey Epstein. DynCorp manages a whole bunch of what DynCorp started doing was managing helicopters and planes, maintenance and fixing helicopters and planes. So they also got into training pilots, for different countries, how to do drug interdiction and so forth. Well, when you're flying a training mission, you may as well fill it up with drugs or money going the other way or arms going the other way. So a lot of these airports around the border are used for instance, Jeffrey Epstein's plane is a DynCorp helicopter. It's the same tail number as a DynCorp helicopter.
So is he in the CIA? Or is he?
He works for the CIA. I mean, people don't realize that, but I mean, he works for the CIA, and he has a big ranch called El Zorro Ranch. You can Google that. But all this stuff, all these trafficking things, go together as one thing.
Probably what's so hard for my listeners to understand. All of this is all mixed in together. So all these wars to overthrow countries and stuff like you explained, they go in first and they steal the money and they steal the weapons and then they do the drug trafficking and organ harvesting.
And the child trafficking. So you have gangs in the U.S., you've got different gangs, Somali gangs and Spanish, La Raza type gangs, where kids are brought in. That have been abducted in Central America and that are being trafficked, for local gangs. The key is it's controlled by the local sheriff or the local police chief. Now, some counties, there's about 3,200 counties or something like that in the U.S. Not all of them are corrupt. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying the ones with the little airport and the little helicopter pad next to each other and a bunch of businesses that don't seem to ever have any customers, like MENA Airport, selling parking meters and taking parking meters to Nicaragua. Really? That's what you look for. And you don't need to, you only need, out of 3,000 counties, you only need, 30 or 40 of those to be crooked because you can fly. Helicopter can fly to where you need to go. And I'm not talking about the rat lines where you can just have a backpack, for marijuana and so forth, but I'm talking about the more valuable, cocaine and heroin have about the same value, and meth have about the same value as gold in by weight. So that's the stuff that you want to be, that's the stuff that you want to be flying around. You don't want that, caught in a car. That's why most of the drug interdictions you'll see you know, the guy's trunk is full of marijuana. You very rarely see his trunk full of heroin.
Right.
They fly that because it's too valuable. It's too valuable.
Right. And so even with all the how they check everybody coming in and out of airports and everything now, they still pull this off and get away with it, huh?
Yeah, because they're in the business. Night Corps is in the business of training these pilots, so they have to be saying, okay, well, you know, we're going to go and do a training mission over the border in Mexico. Night Corps, remember, manages the police forces. They train the police forces to do this stuff, okay?
Really?
And again, you don't need, they manage the police force in Pakistan, for instance. They train and manage the police force there. Mexico, Colombia, El Salvador, Honduras, Haiti, Kosovo, Bosnia, all over the world. I mean, there's about, I think they're in about 30 different countries doing police force training. They also train people in surveillance and harassment as well. So if you're flying these missions, training missions, you may as well fill it up. You know,
right.
There's nothing that makes an Air Force person more angry than what they call a no-load, where there's nothing in the cargo bay. It's almost a sin, you know, in the Air Force and the CIA.
So what's going on with the Orgas harvesting?
Well, that's
still
the
going
new
on
one.
Strong in all these countries?
Yeah, that's the new one. They used to, you know, that was started in Kosovo. And that was around 1999 and so forth, where the Serbian prisoners were being harvested for their organs, because they're, with organ harvesting, the donor has to be pretty close to the recipient because of transportation and so forth, or better yet, even alive. So you had people going to Romania. And I don't know if you remember the incredible hospitals that Ceausescu used to have, who used to run Romania. But what they would do is they would transfer the Russian prisoner over there, and then they would do the organ transplants there in Romania. And they also would warehouse the kids from these wars, the orphans. They would house them there. And that's that whole thing. You remember the orphans of Kosovo, and the ones that nobody wanted were the last kids, you know. And that's when it became a news story. But that was going on during the whole Kosovo. It's still going on. The current prime minister, or president, excuse me, of Kosovo, Thaci, T-H-A-C-I, is still doing organ harvesting. There's still disappearances every day in Kosovo.
What's going on down in Haiti? I see more people getting busted down there for those fake orphanages they set up all over the country to do human trafficking and organ harvesting out of.
Yeah. There is there was one that, see, a lot of these groups, these what they call NGOs, non-government organizations, are set up, they're actually kind of CIA fronts. One of them is called Operation Underground Railroad, and you know, Glenn Beck speaks on their behalf every once in a while, and they supposedly do these things where they're, now they have no government authority supposedly, but they have a huge publicity budget, and they've got great, you know, the best speedboats, and they stay at the best hotels, and you know, they live like kings. They got the best alcohol, and they supposedly set up these sex trafficking stings. So they go get, they'll invite a bunch of local girls and sell them a free weekend with, you know, all the, you know, booze they can drink, and then they bring in the locals. Well, that's the part you see on the news. The part you don't see is those same folks are doing the abductions for politicians and generals and so forth. They're not doing it directly, but they're enabling the police forces to do that sort of thing. So Operation Underground Railroad goes home, but then the police force is there, which is a UN police force. Normally, a lot of these things are done through UN police forces, so they can use them over and over in different countries. That's who's doing the abduction. And so if you say the word DynCorp, D-Y-N-C-O-R-P, and then organ harvesting in WikiLeaks, get a cup of coffee, because your screen's going to be rolling for a while.
Really?
Or sex trafficking. Say DynCorp and sex trafficking.
Right. You know, I was real sad that one time I was watching one of your videos and you were saying, you know, that, they like all the people in Syria because they don't smoke and they don't drink, and so they have healthy organs. And everything. This is so sad. Yeah, these people who lived a good life, you know, and then they're the first to be harvested because their organs are healthy.
Yeah, and actually right now, you know, and early on in my series, I talked about how Hillary, you know, used a company by the name of Osprey Global. Osprey is a heavy lift airplane that's used by the U.S. military. It can fly both vertically if it turns its propellers vertical and fly horizontally when it flips them the other way. That's the ideal drug carrying idea because it gets set down in the desert. And normally the number one problem with these crashes in the Central American waters, Iran-Contra, was you had the short landing strips. So anyway, the Osprey Global, the guy who runs that, General Grange, had a company with Sid Blumenthal, which is Hillary's right-hand man. Mm-hmm. And they used that company to work with Muslim Brotherhood to overthrow Gaddafi. Well, Gaddafi had Stinger missiles, and he also had sarin gas. And they gave that, they moved that supply to Amman, Jordan, and then the King of Abdullah gave that to ISIS. And there was a lot of you know, people questioning who used the sarin gas. Well, recently here in Mosul, you see every day now that ISIS is using the sarin gas. You see now in Raqqa. Raqqa was the capital of ISIS. That's where all the information was about the kids and all the whole sex trafficking network. So now you see our Marines are going in. We're trying to clean all that up right now because they don't want that evidence to get out. But there's going to be laptops with photos of kids on them. All these kids that have been our war orphans have been sold off to UAE, Saudi Arabia, and you can go to my website and look at the citations that I have for all this. There's always photographic evidence and so forth, sources and citations. New York Times, you know, has reported this, that ISIS has used, you know, poison gas 61 times. But anytime you see that poison gas, it's almost a marker for sex trafficking. Almost a marker for sex trafficking. If you're willing to kill a whole bunch of children with poison gas, which is an indiscriminate tool of, you know, of death and torture, then you have no qualms selling the kid off. Once you take over the city, the kids that don't die, you have no qualms at all selling that off to pay for your war. That's how ISIS got so much money so fast. It's not because the oil was nice. The oil rat line was good. But the child network was great as far as money is concerned. Instant profits. Instant.
Right, so they're always going to all these countries, you know, for illegal gains, to steal their resources, to steal their children, to steal their organs. And majority of Americans don't even know that we attacked half of these countries, let alone what we're doing.
Well, the one I always enjoy is when they say Syria is a civil war. No, it isn't a civil war. It's, you know, and I actually use the Operation Code Name that, you know, came out in the New York Times later on. But Timber Sycamore was the name of the plan to destabilize Syria. And there has been a plan. I produce secret documents, you know, from that are now declassified. This plan is basically a 30-year-old plan. And I produced the top secret document that says what the plan was. You know, cut it in half, establish rat lines on one side to pay for enough weapons to then take over the other half. And that same playbook, it just happens over and over and over again, whether it's Kosovo, Bosnia, Haiti, wherever the UN peacekeepers come in later, that's another signature of, oh, here we go again with the organ harvesting rat line, and here we go with the child trafficking. They use the sarin gas to clear a rat line, to clear the towns and have the people flee. And then they enforce the rat line away from the helicopters and planes with these Stinger missiles. And that's why you see, a lot of times the other signature you'll see is sarin gas and Stinger missiles. And that's another signature of these rat line operations.
Right. in Aleppo. Now, they freed Aleppo finally, didn't they, Syria and Russia?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they were running. They were running that rat line through Aleppo, and that's why they kept them out of there all these years, isn't it?
Absolutely. They found a huge weapons cache. I have that photographic evidence in one of my or a couple of my episodes as well. The little blue canisters and so forth, and the launching, so forth. And I've got film of how they actually, you know, them loading canisters and firing them into Damascus. So Aleppo was one of the rat lines, and then the rat line to Iran. So you think, they're just dealing with, you know, the Wahhabis and Sunnis down in the repressive regimes of the Middle East. No, there's also a rat line in Mosul up to the northeast, where kind of like New York would be in the United States. That is the rat line to Iran. So they've got an organ harvesting rat line there, a sex trafficking rat line, and drugs going and weapons going in that direction.
And these countries can't stop this?
Well, you have to have... the CIA has been doing this since the day they were born, in 1947 with the National Security Act. So I always say the CIA didn't create Wall Street. Wall Street created the CIA. From the day one, it was meant to not have to go to Congress. CIA was supposed to be just an intelligence collecting organization, kind of like the NSA. It wasn't supposed to have a lot of field officers, but because we had these OSS officers from World War II that were very experienced in demolition, you know, blowing up water, poisoning water, and blowing up railroad trains and cutting power lines and all that stuff, it turned into a covert army, kind of Wall Street's army, right from day one. And they planted, the CIA planted what they call gladios. This was short for the word gladiator, but these gladio units would be, a lot of them were run through the churches, so like the Catholic Church in Poland and Catholic Church in Czechoslovakia and so forth. But what they do is they cache weapons all around in different weapons caches, and then they would have a secret intelligence network gathering information and also training over the border in different border areas, dropping people in, you know, all this stuff. And the same thing is people don't believe this, but there is a program in the U.S. for exactly the same reason. And the man I talked about earlier, General Grange, with Osprey Global, with Sid Blumenthal, his son, General Grange's son, is in charge of that program for the United States. And same thing, you take a whole bunch of operatives, you have them, you know, training all the time and getting ready for the day when, if there is trouble, that you have the access, fast access to weapons and also a well-trained anti-insurgency force that you can call at a moment's notice. There just has never been a need. There's never been an armed uprising in the United States for that. But it I guarantee you, that just like in 190 other countries that the CIA does business in, they do that. They have the same program here.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in the United States, it's done through the CIA needed to infiltrate the FBI. So they call it the wall. In the FBI, they call it the wall. There's the field side. There's the 50 or so field offices. And those were the old gumshoes, you know, if you called them and then you'd said, I think there's something going on, they would go out and actually, you know, interview people and get collect evidence, and then they would prosecute and call grand juries and stuff, with working with the U.S. attorneys and so forth. This side, the other side of the FBI, is this counterterrorism division, which is who Andrew McCabe is and how he came up through the FBI. And that's the group that got infiltrated by the CIA. And they came up with this thing called, two things called fusion centers and joint terrorism task force. And what the fusion centers are is there's 50 of them for 50 states, and then there's 25 major cities. So there's about 75 in total. I think it might be 72. But they're information collectors for local, state, and federal agency law enforcement, everything you can think of. You remember Snowden and the PRISM
system?
PRISM. That was that lookup capability that you could look up almost a whole dossier. If I wanted to look up Evelyn Pringle, I'd just type it in to like a Google search engine, and all this stuff would come up. You know, your IRS, your credit card history, your travel history, your receipts from Amazon.com, all your phone
numbers. Dossier on me.
Yeah, you're,
there's nothing to find, though. It's so funny. There's nothing to find.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what a boring life I lead.
Well, the problem is that counterterrorism is supposed to be used for terrorism. The problem when Wall Street is in charge, Wall Street, the top of the Fortune 500, 250 of the Fortune 500 have contributed to fusion centers. So they're a public-private partnership. It's kind of like paying, in the old days of Rome, you used to pay the soldiers that came home from the wars because you didn't want your business burned down. It's protection. And you can use that intelligence now that is gained if you're competing against someone. So let's say you have a whistleblower, okay, or somebody who's suing you, or someone who is a competitor to you. You can start using this intelligence as to target people. And that's really the thing that Hillary brought to the table. Hillary really, other people had used it before. Dick Cheney had used it a little bit before with the wiretaps and going after political opponents. But Hillary has this idea of deplorables and really expanded the terrorism watch list. So the FBI has this list called the no-fly list that most people are familiar with, which only has about 75,000 to 100,000 people's names on it. Some people say 50,000. But the terrorism watch list has about 3 million people.
Right.
And that's the list they don't talk about, but that's the list where once you get marked on that, it's a constant law enforcement, public utilities, mental health professionals are targeting to add to your dossier of black marks so that every person who sees it after that sees black marks on your name. And it's not a fun list to be on, and you can't find out about it. You can't sue the government and find out if you're on the list because they say it's a state secret. So it's really goes back to Hitler's punch cards. I mean, it's a blacklist. And it should be, we should have the right as Americans to say, okay, am I on the list? And then I want to be able to present a case to get off the list. You know, because it's an invasion of the Fourth Amendment, which is your right to, your illegal search and seizure and a right to privacy.
Right. Definitely. I mean, what was out in that Vault 7, boy, they wonder how people are reacting to this being spied on constantly right in their homes. I mean, my God, you're in your own bedroom? They can see whatever you're doing?
Kellyanne Conway made the comment that this stuff came out, and it's funny because CNN reported all week that, you know, you could do this kind of spying, and then she mentioned it yesterday and said you could do spying through the camera on your phone or the camera on your laptop or even televisions or even the microwave. They looked at her like she was some kind of conspiracy theorist. It's like, all last week you guys were reporting on this, so I'm just quoting you, you know. So it's interesting, but
how long
idea
has this been going on, George? Do you know?
The Vault 7 stuff, the part of... so there's different what they call directorates in the CIA. There's five different directorates. The one that everybody probably knows of is kind of the operations, which is the Valerie Plames, you know, spy girl all over the world, you know. But there's another directorate which provides support. And support is like, in the case of Vault 7, and they called it the fine dining menu. The fine dining menu was, you know, you go to a case officer or a station chief overseas, and you say, what do you want? You want character assassination? Do you want, hacking? Do you want eavesdropping? Do you want how do you want, you just check off what you want, and we'll figure out what kind of devices are in his home, you know, the target's home. We'll figure out what kind of car he has, figure out the hack of the car. We'll put the GPS and all that stuff. We'll figure out what kind of phone he has and all the different hacks we need to do. You just need to check the menu. Right, and this support has been around. You know, most people think of it as Q and James Bond, and that's been around since that directory has been around since the first day of the CIA. Hacking really started really the day computers started. You know, viruses and all that sort of thing really started the day computers started.
Right. I think back, I don't think I really went on the internet. I don't think it was till it was probably about 96 or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it was kind of difficult to be on the internet before then. You could send mail, but the first browser really doesn't come out until 1995 with Netscape and Mosaic browser. So people really didn't surf the internet. Like they started doing in more like 97, 98, that sort of thing.
Right. You say you get some messages from different law enforcement and stuff. Do you hear anything on any arrests coming up on the Pizzagate deal on the child trafficking? No.
Well, a lot of, unfortunately, the FBI and mainly the CIA does what they call a dangle. They dangle mm-hmm. something out in front of you 30 days from now, like Vault 7 was kind of a dangle, or a week out. And then you follow, and then at the end, nothing happens, and then you're disappointed. So that leads CIS investigators to be discouraged and not stay a part of the investigation. And this happens in my investigation all the time, where people say, oh, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Yeah, because it's a way of sharding your following so that you don't ever make any headway. Unfortunately, or fortunately for me, my audience is kind of organic and has grown with me with my credibility. But this happens all the time. There's one supposedly New York police group of detectives that have given the FBI 1 week to turn over the FEMA's email server, or they're going to release it. Or they've given him Comey a week to resign or something. I never believed these things, but Vault 7 actually I thought was a dangle, and it turned out to be true. I mean, it was 8,000 pages of documentation. Then there was another one that came out the next day, which was even more detailed. The first one was kind of like an organizational chart, talking about that support directorate within the and talking about what the different menu items were. For the fine dining menu. But then the next day it came out and said, like, there's this tool named Umbridge. And they call them these kind of wacky spy names, you know, Umbridge. But it makes it look like a Russian hacker. So you can go in and do a hack, like, let's say, this Trump Tower hack, and you can hack into a bank on one side, and you can hack into Trump Tower on the other side. And you can do it from a place, from a third party. You can hack their systems, so you can't even trace who did the hack. Like through Spectrum Health is what they did, Becky DeVos's company. And you can just have them, you know, it looks like, if forensic analysis later on, it looks like the Russians did it. Because what they did is they took a Russian tool from the beginning, hacked into there and got it, and then modified it with a different front end. So the documentation level for what Umbridge does and all the other tools, $100 billion worth of tools, is actually out there now, too. Now, the code isn't out there, but the feeling is if you had access to the whole menu for the first release, 8,000 pages with the structure, and then you had all the tool documentation down to the last, you know, it's like getting an owner's manual for your car, you know, very detailed, that they would have also had access to the code as well. And the CIA has admitted that the code has been compromised as well. So the $100 billion is out there somewhere.
Well, you know, how can we stop this when the CIA and the FBI and everything are all involved in it?
You know, it turns out there's an incredibly easy way to do that.
How's that?
First of all, yeah, Gulen, G-U-L-E-N, Gulen. He has been, the Turkish government has requested him to be extradited to Turkey for doing that Turkish coup that I talked to you about. So all we have to do is just honor the request for Erdogan. Well, that cuts out half of the infiltration of the U.S. It's sort of like cutting the head off the snake. That cuts out half the infiltration of the U.S. because it cuts the funding to the schools. Yep, we just honored Turkey's request to get rid of Gulen. That cuts the head off the snake. 50%, because of the money now. How do you get the money through their network and back in to fund the schools? How do you do it?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And
right.
He's the key. Now, there's going to be seconds and thirds that are going to come in and try to take over, but Erdogan is going to be able to find out who those people are because he's got Gulen. And just like he unwound the Erdogan does drugs too. I'm not saying he's a great guy. He tortures and all that. But I'm just saying that he went through and I think purged like I think it was like 10,000 police officers. I mean that he fired because Gulen had infiltrated all these
people. They planted all over there, in Turkey. They implanted people planted all over in the government in Turkey.
Oh, yeah, especially the police force and the legal system, but also in politics and journalists as well. The number one thing, just send Gulen. Now, there's this other guy that this Preet Bharara, who was just fired, U.S. attorney in New York, Southern District of New York, he was slow-footing an arrest of, he's sort of a delivery guy. His name is... Zarab, Z-A-R-R-A-B. But he was Gulen's bagman for the drug revenues. And he was arrested last April. So all we need to do is put in a district attorney in the Southern District of New York that will actually prosecute that guy. Preet Bharara has been slow-footing that investigation, but if you put in a real district attorney to go after that guy, that whole rat line becomes exposed. And every time you expose a rat line, it costs them twice as much to establish a new one. So those are two quick things that Trump can do. The other one is Trump really needs to bring in Dan Coats. Now he was a congressman from Indiana, and Dan Coats is pretty establishment for what they call the Department of National Intelligence, ODNI. ODNI. He hasn't been confirmed yet, but. As long as you have Clapper or Clapper second pushing this Russia hoax, you're never really going to drain the swamp. You have to kind of – ODNI sits on top of all the 17 different intelligence agencies. And until you get control of the top of if you don't control the head of the body, the rest of the body is not going to work for you. So that's something else that we have to do is get that going. And then the other thing is, you know, Preet Bharara drove by the Clinton, or his driver drove him by the Clinton Foundation on Fifth Avenue every day.
Really?
Right, for eight years. 8 years.
Really?
Yeah. And he never got out, never walked in the Avenue of Fifth Americas and said, hey, what's going on here with all this money coming in? Just somehow missed it. He went all over the world. Preet Bharara went all over the world chasing people, right? His nickname was the Southern District of Everywhere, not New York. But he somehow managed to miss the Clinton Foundation. Well, the Clinton Foundation is the head of the octopus. It is the head of the octopus, and it's the Awan brothers. It's all this illegal rat line money. Now, admittedly, there was other foundations that did this sort of thing before the Clinton Foundation. He just turned it up to a new level. And that's the other thing, is appoint a special prosecutor for the Clinton Foundation and drain the swamp. Those are the three big things. And when Preet was fired, that's when I said, I think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to go after the Clinton Foundation.
Sure. And you know, what listeners don't understand, when we're trying to bust all the people for Pizzagate in this country, we bust that, it affects all these other rat lines where they're doing the child trafficking and stuff in all these other countries. So it's
everything.
Not just about busting the politicians and the CEOs and stuff in this country.
Yeah, I mean,
the whole network.
If we did or have a special prosecutor for DynCorp, I don't want to hurt the 95% of employees, and I'm talking about DynCorp International. This is the international business.
Right.
That are good airplane mechanics and good helicopter mechanics or police trainers that are doing the right thing. 95% are not doing these black ops. These black ops happen at night. They happen with just a few teams. And so you could go to DynCorp and work every day for 30 years and never see any of this.
Never know.
But unfortunately, it does exist. And you can look at this movie, Whistleblower, or read anything that Cynthia McKinney has said over the years about DynCorp, or just look at the U. Yeah. Go ahead. You still there?
Yeah, I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes
what do you
I get
know? We made it.
Our friends.
We made it without getting cut off today.
We made it without getting cut off? Yeah.
Yeah. I thought maybe we just lost it, but we didn't. But let's see, how much time do we have left here? Let's see, is it 12:58?
Yeah.
We're taping
this. We made it to the end of the hour.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So
we. Well, thank you for coming on, George, and you really made a lot of headway in this investigation. I'll tell you, I've been following your videos right along, and man, you're up to this point now in these Awan brothers, and man, you've uncovered this story is bigger than Watergate or any other.
This is 20 Watergates because there was 20 congressional break-ins. It wasn't a break-in of a psychologist's office. It was 20 congressional office break-ins. Yeah.
Right. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, well, I'll let you go, and we will talk to you soon, and I'll be watching your videos. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Evelyn. Yep, it's great to be back. All right.
Good, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Well, people, I hope you learned some information today. I sure did. George is doing